Hello, everyone, and welcome to the State of the Gamecocks podcast. I forgot what it was for a second. My name is Brooks Davis, joined alongside by my co-host, Drew Bonds. Drew, I got a pretty good feeling of how you're doing today, but how are you doing today?
Yeah, I don't know how you be doing good. They have done it pretty much as far as the regular season goal. They clinched a complete share of the regular season championship, and of course they will now host the conference title game at home on December 6th, and it has been a 10-week run of pretty unbelievable football by Rich Rod's group. When you can rattle off 8 in a row, 7 of those being conference games, it says a lot about your football team. And I didn't like we've said on this podcast a couple of hundred times probably at this point. And after those first three games, that there wasn't a lot of confidence in what this team was doing, and they flipped the switch in the second half against Eastern Michigan. No, they didn't end up winning that game, but the offense and defense flipped a switch there against Eastern Michigan, and here they are. They've rattled off 8 straight, and they're 8-3, and they're in the best possible spot they could be in at this point in the season. So we'll talk a little bit about the Western game on the next episode. But if you heard us this week, we talked about, you know, this game with Sam Houston is really important, but not as important as the Western game. And that's not true anymore. Due to Western slipping up again, and they've lost back-to-back conference games. Now I'll get into that in a minute. That Western game next week is a non-event as far as the conference schedule goes. Now, there is a lot of reasons that Jackson needs to go win that game and play good and that kind of thing. We'll get into that later on in the week. But just from a conference perspective, that game next week doesn't have any meaning, or that game this week, I should say, has no meaning. Jack State hosts a title game no matter what, and they'll get one of 3 different competitors, being Western, Liberty, or Sam Houston. Well, I guess one of those 3 teams. We'll get into those also at another time. But for right now, we'll break down Sam Houston, and we'll go from there. But real quick, Jack State 21, Sam Houston 11. And if you kind of look at the numbers here, Jack State leaned on one guy, at least offensively, and that was Tyler Huff, to run the ball. He had 30 carries for 177 yards and all 3 touchdowns that Jack State scored. Or touchdown runs from Tyler Huff. He only threw the ball for 54 yards. He didn't have to throw it a ton. He did complete 9 of 12 passes. It's just they were short little bitty passes, most of them were. So didn't have to throw the ball downfield, didn't try to. Longest play was a 22-yard catch or passing catch by Sean Brown. Everything else beyond that was under 10 yards. So, you know, overall they leaned on what was working, and that was Tyler Huff running the football. I think Sam Houston had a really good game plan for Trey Stewart. He had 27 carries for 99 yards, which is 3.7 per attempt, which is not where he normally is. So good on the Bearcat defense for containing Trey Stewart. But, Brooks, I'll let you give your thoughts on the game for right now.
Like you said, they've done it. They've not to repeat, you know, keep repeating what we said on – past episodes and what you said, but you know, this from where this it really is hard to tell a lot about a team in week one, because it is such a long season and teams develop, teams get better. Sometimes teams regress, some teams, you know, some teams start off hot and then just get progressively worse. I think that was, you know, kind of the case with Sam Houston and a little bit of Western Kentucky to a point, but this, you know, this team looked absolutely abysmal against Coastal Carolina. We had one decent drive that we scored on, and Trey Stewart had a big run. But other than that, could not move the ball, could not tackle, could not block, could not do anything right in that game. And then we've said it over and over, if we could go back and play that game today, I think we beat Coastal 2 touchdowns. Coastal's not a bad team. Not a great team by any stretch of the imagination. I think, and the same thing with Eastern Michigan. And I think we go back and we play Louisville pretty close if we don't win it. Louisville didn't exactly pan out to kind of what we thought they would be after the first 6 weeks or so. They kind of hung around the upper part of the top 25, but just to see the progression that this team has made over the course of the last, over the course of the last 11 games is just absolutely phenomenal. You know, what we're seeing is mind blowing in a positive light. Seeing, you know, we didn't know who the quarterback was going to be at the start of the season, Smothers, Huff, or even Zion Turner to a point. You know, we didn't know a whole lot about Trey Stewart. We knew he came in from Limestone University, but that was about it. Didn't have a whole lot. And for, you know, these guys to be just the absolute dominant players that they are, it's unbelievable stuff that we're seeing. running out of synonyms to use, but you know, this was a game. This was a game that, as I said before we got started recording, it was a game plan that we've used now on two of the top four teams in the conference, where line up and running at them with Huff and Stewart and make them stop you. Let Huff throw, you know, when we absolutely need to. And Huff made the throws. He made some really nice throws. Rates made some really nice throws to pretty much every receiver on our roster or tight end. Nine different receivers caught the ball on nine completions. But, you know, it never really just had to make a big throw because they didn't have an answer for him on the ground. Like you said, they did a pretty good job of plugging up Trey Stewart, and the guy still had 99 yards. So you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, that's the approach that we had against Liberty, and Trey Stewart just dominated. Huff threw when he needed to, and he made some good plays with his feet. And this was kind of the same case, but with Huff. So, you know, absolutely, you know, just great. Like, and you know, you said before we got started too, this game should have been about 35-11. If Jack State wanted to put up more points, they absolutely could have. We certainly left some points out on the field, but the defense too. But the defense too, stepping up when they needed to, absolutely just smothering Hunter Watson, Juwan Campbell, Kawan McCray. Fred Perry even got in on the action, just absolutely staying in the backfield. And for what Watson was able to do with his feet was pretty good. Heck, he had over 105 yards in their one touchdown. But just 13 to 25 and for 84 yards, just absolutely could not get anything. And he just didn't look good. Something, I don't know. Drew, you said you didn't think it was the injury that bugged him, but just, you know, just making bad passes just wasn't, he was certainly very mobile. Clearly he had all the rushing yards. But just not there. Something very strange with Hunter Watson.
Like you said, very mobile, had over 100 yards on the ground, and there were some design runs for him, but a lot of those yards came from scrambling. He broke, you know, Jackson should have had three or four more sacks than what they ended up with. Look at the numbers here for the defense. And like you said, they played a really, really good game. But if you look at the total sacks the defense had, they had two, and they should have had several more than that. I thought that they got pressure on Hunter Watson, you know, throughout the game at different times. And he was mobile enough to work around it. Now, they did have seven tackles for loss as a team, which is really good, but only the two sacks, half a sack for Kylan McCray, half a sack for Fred Perry, who was probably their best playmaker defensively, and then Juwan Campbell had his sack from his nose tackle position. But it was a secondary that played really good. Now I don't know if it was, you know, the Jack State secondary getting, you know, improving a lot from week to week, or it was just, you know, Hunter Watson missing throws, and from where we were sitting, it seemed to be a little bit of both. I thought the coverage was much improved, but Hunter Watson, you know, throwing balls at, you know, people's feet and you know, overthrows and that kind of thing, just the accuracy was not there from Hunter Watson. And that really, really made it tough on the Bearcat offense to move the football, which is what we've seen from them for 4, 5, 6 weeks now. The offense just struggling ever since that second half against Western Kentucky. So certainly some work to do for the Bearcats, at least on the offense side of the football. I thought their defense played well. Brooks, like you said, Jack State did leave points on the board, probably anywhere from 10 to 21 points that they didn't finish off. They had a couple drives in the first half stall out in no man's land, kind of, you know, too close to punt and too far for a field goal, and they went for it on fourth down and didn't get it a couple times. And then at the end of the first half, man, if you were there or you watched him on TV, you're going to know where this is going. But Rimshrod usually does a really good job clock management. You know, he's the one of the most experienced coaches in college football now. But just a weird scenario for Jack State at the end of the first half. Like, they just weren't trying to score. I mean, they're up 14-3. And Sam Houston did get the ball to start the second half. So it wasn't like they were, you know, far and away, you know, out in front with nothing to worry about. And, you know, they moved the ball to the 40, their own 40-yard line with a minute left and three timeouts and just kind of let the clock run down. It was a little bit weird. I don't know if they were happy where they were or there was miscommunication or what, but with three timeouts, I don't know if Rich Rod is not the one, you know, to call a timeout. It has to be one of the players. You know, one of the assistant coaches can't call timeout. Only on the sideline that can is the head coach. So I don't know if there was confusion about what the offense was going to do. Like, if, you know, if Rich Rod thought they're going to get up real quick and spike it or get up real fast and run a play. But, yeah, just lackluster clock management from Rich Rod. I didn't really understand what they were attempting to do. Now, to be fair, Cam Vaughn got the touchdown pass. They did get run a couple more plays inside of 20 seconds from midfield, and one of them was a deep ball to Cam Vaughn to hit him right between the 1 and 8 on his jersey that would have been a touchdown that he dropped. But the clock management in the first half was was very confusing. So left points on the board there. Flip Rudolph fumbled a punt. So, you know, that could turn into points there. And like we said, we saw drives stall out, you know, beyond the 50-yard line. So you like to think that, you know, if you finish off one or two of those drives, there's some points there. So the Sam Houston defense played well. I know Tyler Huff's stat line was really, really good running the football, but they did kind of limit Trey Stewart to only 99 yards, and he didn't score a touchdown for the first time in several weeks. So good on the Bearcat defense there. But it was the Tyler Huff show, for sure. And then, like I said, the Jack State defense did their part, holding Sam Houston to 11 points. You know, they didn't force any turnovers. They had an interception late in the game that got dropped, technically, but it would have been an amazing play to hold on to it. But the defense played really well. Like we said, Fred Perry led them in tackles and tackles for loss from his star position. Antonio Carter had a bunch of tackles. Joan Campbell had the sack. Curly Young and Olete Hale had a half tackle for loss each. So it was a complete game defensively, from the defensive back, the linebackers, to the front seven, or to the defensive line there. Everybody played really, really well. So it was a very happy senior day. And then after the game ended, we got the good news that Liberty took care of business against Western Kentucky and clinched home field advantage for Jack State. So couldn't be more happy with how the game went. Just wish the offense would have finished off a couple of those drives there close into the game. Sorry, I'm raspy. I'm a little stopped up for those that are wondering why I sound like I've smoked Marlboro Reds today.
Well, that ain't you. But we'll.
But... But if we're we'll move on from there and you move into our stars of the game. I know the fan star there was Tyler Huff, and that is the correct choice. Let's talk a little bit about him now. Of course, he had the, you know, all three touchdowns, like we said, that Jack State scored. So, Brooks, tell us a little bit about Tyler Huff, and then we'll point to some other guys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the game was Tyler Huff 21, Sam Houston State 11. It just, again, it would just, I go on and on and on about, you know, just the absolute phenom that Tyler Huff is and what we're seeing out of him. He picked up a lot of garnered a lot of national attention this week, as a matter of fact, or conference and a little bit national. So he is the Conference USA Offensive Player of the Week. I believe this is his, I know it's at least the second time. It may even be his third time as Offensive Player of the Week for Conference USA. He also, let me pull up the tweet. According to Thomas Ashworth, Jacksonville State quarterback Tyler Huff's 13 rushing touchdowns this season are tied for the most by a quarterback in conference history. And a very good possibility, you know, he breaks that record, breaks that record, has it for his own come next Saturday against Western. I fully expect over the next two games, he at least gets one. He's setting conference records. He's just absolutely unbelievable stuff that we're seeing out of this kid. He's also, he moved up in, where'd it go? He moved up in, national rushing yards. Here it is. He's now 21st in the country in rushing yards with 1,079, averaging 6 yards a carry. But from a quarterback standpoint, he is now the second leading he's second in rushing yards for quarterbacks in the country, only to Bryson Daly of Army. He's 11th in the country with 1,201. He's not far behind him. He has another game like he did today. Then, you know, he'll be right on his rear end. Trey Stewart, however, moved up to 5th in the country with 1,318. Still 700 yards behind Ashton Genty, but very, very much in contention for that second spot. But nonetheless, Tyler Huff, just what we're seeing is unbelievable. This is very liable to go down as second or third greatest season at quarterback in Jack State history, at least from a rushing standpoint. You know, I know Eli threw for a lot of touchdowns, but he ran for a bunch too. So it's still Eli, and then probably Ed Lett, and then you start getting into Huff and Zarek Cooper. He's another one like Trey Stewart. I wish there was a way we could get him back for one more year the way the NCAA hands out extra years. Maybe we could do something even more special with him next year. But you know, it is what it is. But certainly a massive, massive day for Tyler Huff, and well deserved star of the week.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, where you want to rank this in Jack State history from a quarterback perspective, and it's probably behind what Eli did. You know, pick whatever year you want to from Eli, probably 2015, but he runs the ball better than anyone Jack has ever had at the quarterback position. I don't think that Zion Webb or Eli or anybody else ran the ball like Tyler Huff did. I know after the game, Richrod said when he's talking to they're talking on post game the press conference about Tyler Huff finishes runs better than any quarterback he's ever seen. And you know, part of that's due to the fact that he just refuses to slide. We've begged him for, you know, 11 games now to slide, but it's not going to happen. It's the world we live in. He's just very physical runner from the quarterback position. And if you guys, I'm sure you've seen the clip of the block he threw when he handed off to Trey Stewart, where he just flattened one of the Bearcat defenders on a blitz there. So he does everything in the quarterback position. And from the one thing he doesn't do that Eli did is ball placement. I always thought that Eli had the best ball placement I've ever seen live. At least on some of those sideline routes that they ran over and over and over and over again with Josh Barnes, Ruben Gonzalez, where Eli just put on the back shoulder every time in the same spot for the same catch. That's the one thing you don't get out of Tyler Huff. His arm is plenty strong enough to do whatever you need him to do in that part of it. But the ball placement from Tyler Huff is not the same level as what we saw from Eli. I think that's the biggest separator in those two. And that'll be probably a hot topic this offseason. We'll get into obviously the whole season and break everything down pretty well. And one of those things will be, you know, where are we going to rank the season that Tyler Huff's had? And you know, if it wasn't for what Eli was able to do in 4 years and Eli's ball placement being elite, you know, Tyler Huff probably number one there. But that's a topic for another day, I guess. Other than that, I thought Fred Perry played a really good game defensively. Of course, Fred Perry does so many good things for the Gamecock defense, whether he's on a nickel blitz or he's playing in coverage or playing man, you know, man-to-man coverage. He can do anything you need him to do, and he got pressure on the quarterback. He made tackles in the backfield and around the line of scrimmage. I don't know if he's the best defender on the team. I know Reggie Hughes does a lot of really good things. You know, Lete Hale does a lot of really good things. Of course, J-Rock Swain does a lot of really good things also. But in that back end of the defense, man, Fred Perry he's just fun to watch. Just take a drive against Western or if you go to the conference title game at home and just watch Fred Perry and how much he moves around and what they allow and what they ask him to do, and he's able to do it. Now, I know he's a little bit wild when he comes over the middle, and he's been kicked out of a game already, and you know, if he plays enough football, he's going to get kicked out of a couple more because he's not holding anything. He does not let off the gas pedal. He had a targeting call reviewed in the Sam Houston game. It got overturned because it was a really good, clean hit. But he does so many good things to Jack State defense. A player we don't talk enough about, I think, because the defense has struggled at times this year, and it has been such an offensive-heavy football team. But Fred Perry really does good things for the Gamecock defense. It doesn't always show up on the stat sheet. But he is more than deserving of some recognition for what he brings to the table defensively. Not a big guy, but he's a very intelligent football player. And he timed up a blitz and was in the backfield when the ball was snapped a couple times against Sam Houston, which is what intelligent football players do. So Fred Perry will be our secondary star of the game. But beyond that, like Brooks alluded to, it was the Tyler Huff show. And everybody else was just along for the ride, so we'll leave it at that. And beyond that, we'll look at the rest of the conference here. Not a lot of games besides that Liberty score to really break down and get excited about. So we'll look at the other ones real quick. But UTEP went to Tennessee, got beat 56-0. Nothing to talk about there. New Mexico State on the road in Murfreesboro gets a 15-point victory. I know Middle Tennessee State has struggled this year, more so than what me and Brooks kind of thought when the season started. But New Mexico State has looked bad at times, and they went down to Murfreesboro and took care of business. So good on the Aggies there on the road. Louisiana Tech went to Arkansas, a game that me and Brooks thought they might be able to hang in with Arkansas with it. Their defense was able to play really good, but they get beat 35-14. Just too many good athletes on the Arkansas side of the football for the Bulldogs to hang with the Razorbacks. And then I don't understand FIU, man. I don't know. I don't get it. They've lost to an FCS team this year. They beat UTEP by 50 points. They went to overtime with Sam Houston. They played Jack State really close 2 weeks ago and lost 34-31. And they turn around this week and get beat by Kennesaw State. I know that's on the road for the second week in a row. But I mean, if you're gonna you know, if you lose by three to Jack State on the road, like, I don't get it. Like, what are you doing against Kennesaw State? I mean, if you look at FIU real quick, you know, they're not going to be bowl eligible. The loss of Jack State was their seventh loss, so that solidified the non-bowl eligible side of things for FIU. So maybe they just lack of effort or what. But as good as we saw, you know, Kiwan Jenkins throw the ball, and as good as this FIU offense looked against JSU, and I know JSU's defense, at least the secondary in that game, did not play very well, but I don't understand. Kennesaw State's a bad football team. There's nothing else to say about the Owls, other than they're just not that good. And they held Kiwan Jenkins to 204 yards and were able to win it with a late field goal. So good for Kenny for getting another win. That's their second of the year. But I'm losing the ability to explain to you what FIU is as a football team, because it's very confusing. And then the other big game of the week, of course, Liberty 38, Western Kentucky 21. That game was in Lynchburg. And Liberty ran the ball as a team for over 300 yards. And they just were able to pull away at the end. Yeah, Veltkamp threw for 262. But it was Quentin Cooley for Liberty, had 166 yards on the ground. And beyond the 262 yards from Veltkamp, I thought the Liberty defense played well. If you can hold Western to 21 points, I think that's a good day for your defense. And Liberty got a huge win that gets them right back into the, you know, right back into the conference title picture. They now control their own destiny. If they beat Sam Houston Friday, then they're in. So good for Liberty, I guess. I don't like them, but they played really well. They got a big win when they needed it. And who knows, maybe this turns their, I don't want to say turns their season around. They are 9-2, but you know, maybe this will stop the you know, beating UMass by 1 point and losing to Kennesaw State and that side of for Liberty, because this was this is the Liberty team we thought we'd see when the year started. At least we saw against Western. But Brooks, I'll let you go over those games that you want to, Liberty especially. But yeah, that's your scores of the week around the conference.
Yeah. Before I do get into the in-depth stuff with these games, I just want to give a quick shout out. Thank you, Louisiana Tech, and this is the only time I ever say this. Thank you, Kennesaw, because without them, without La Tech beating Western, and with La Tech beating Western, and with Kennesaw beating Liberty, this helps. You know, obviously, Western already took care of Sam Houston, without those two games. That helped put us in the driver's seat in this conference way sooner than kind of what we expected. We expected it to really come down to this week. And now, you know, we had a pretty good idea of what it was going to look like, where what we had to do in order to A, get in the conference championship, and B, be able to host it. And we were able to knock it out really all in one day because of, Liberty beat Western. But leading up to that point, because of Kennesaw beating Liberty and Kennesaw beating Liberty and Louisiana Tech beating Western Kentucky, setting up, just putting us in prime position to not only get in the conference championship, but also able to host. Liberty beating Western was the, you know, nail in the coffin and putting us in that position. But shout out for two teams with two schools with very, very up and down seasons. I tip my hat to you. A little bit more respect for you guys for that, especially you, Kennesaw. Still hate you. But nonetheless, Tennessee and UTEP, that game was what it was. New Mexico State. Yep, like you said, going on the road, going in, taking care of business, and moving on to the last one. This is another one where I think Middle Tennessee and FIU are very similar, and maybe even Louisiana Tech to a point, are very similar into some teams just know how to win, and some teams just don't. I don't think this is these three schools. They have some good athletes. Nick Fadiato had a really good day: 30-45, 277 yards, 2 touchdowns. Same with Kewan Jenkins: 12-22, 204 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And of course, Louisiana Tech played Arkansas, and that game was what it was. But these aren't necessarily bad teams. They just cannot finish games. You know, we said last week, Kennesaw kind of finding out, you know, who they are, getting a little bit of momentum, getting a little bit better as the season progressed. Of course, they had the big major upset win against Liberty. And, you know, I think that game kind of started them on the right track of figuring things out, especially with what's going to be a new head coach next year. That might have helped, you know, set a fire under them too. You tend to see in situations like that, the players play a little bit harder than what they might have been before. But like I said, some teams that just some of these schools that just you see the Georgias, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, they just know how to win. They have a recipe for it. They go out and they implement it, and it works every time. Even with injuries, even with penalties killing, they just find ways to win. And I think this little group, Middle Tennessee, FIU, Louisiana Tech, they don't know how to win. They cannot put it together for one reason or another. Again, Vadiato and Jenkins, just two phenomenal athletes. I think, you know, Jenkins has a few more years left. Vadiato's got one more year left to play, or at least one more year left to play. You know, maybe they can go somewhere else and find the talent, you know, with a little bit more talent and especially on the defensive side of the ball, and can find success there. But really mind-boggling stuff. But I think that's what it is. Or I think these few teams just don't know how to win. I think is what it comes down to. Liberty and Western Kentucky. Again, like I said a minute ago, Liberty kind of put the final nail in the coffin in us securing a home conference championship game for, you know, in our second year at the FBS level. But I don't know. We said it on the last podcast. You know, we assume out of the four, you want to play Liberty again in the conference championship game. I don't know that I do now. This was a game. It was in Lynchburg. You know, having that home field advantage certainly helps. This is one that Liberty came in and played like the team we expected them to play, or we expected them to be all year. Just ran up and down the field on Western. Kane Salter didn't have just blow him away, 6 of 11, 108 yards and a touchdown, but the run game, 419 yards on Western. And you know, Rich Rod's looking at that game, just licking his chops, trying to, know what we did with Tyler Huff and, what we've been able to do with him all season. Just absolutely seething, with excitement. But Veltkamp did have to throw the ball a lot, and that's what this team is built around. But from looking at the box score, they never really got to. There weren't any sacks on the day. I don't know. I can't find quarterback hurries, but you know, I don't know if Liberty DBs just played an outstanding game with 3 interceptions on the day. It's hard to win a game when you're negative in the turnover margin like that. And that ended up being the difference in the game. It's a three score game and there were 3 interceptions thrown. So, we'll do our deep dive into Western next week. But if you know, if we can get similar, even similar production, slightly similar production out of our defensive backs like Liberty did against Caden Veltkamp, it's, this might be a long day for the Hilltoppers. But like I said, I don't know. Liberty getting hot, maybe getting hot at the right time. I don't know that. I don't know if I want to play Liberty in the conference championship. Like I said last week, I think, like you, I'm a big Bearcat fan next week.
Yeah. I don't know if it's, you know, maybe it is Liberty getting hot at the right time, which I know that sounds crazy to say because they just beat UMass in overtime last week, and UMass has two wins this year. Both against FCS schools. But I think it's almost more along the lines of Liberty just matched up better against Western Kentucky. If you look at the box score, and you said Caden Salter threw the ball, what, 11 times, you said, I think? Liberty ran it for over 400 yards, and it just kind of seemed like one of those games where Western couldn't stop the run. If you can't stop the run, then, you know, anyone can beat anybody. You know, a game where Velt camped for the ball the wrong team three times. So maybe it is Liberty getting hot at the right time. Maybe it's more Western's bad against the run, and that's just kind of being exposed now. I know we haven't done a lot of diving in the Western Kentucky box scores this year, just because they usually win in good fashion. But I think it might be more along the lines of Liberty just matched up really good. You know, being able to run the ball and playing pretty good pass defense, getting three turnovers, I think that's what won Liberty the game. And the good news is for, you know, Jack State fans, Liberty's not going to run the ball that well against JSU. And I don't think Caden Salters is at the point anymore of being able to throw it, you know, enough to win a game on his own. I would not have said that when the year started because he had played so good last year. But
yeah.
You're talking about a player who had fringe Heisman talks to start the year. You know, he was a dark horse to go to New York and be there for the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and he just threw the ball 11 times in a football game. 11. Now, I know he runs the ball pretty well, but I mean, 6 out of 11 is you know, over 100 yards, cool and all, but it seems like that Jamie Chadwell does not trust Caden Salters to go win football games. And if Jack State does end up playing Liberty, it's going to take Caden Salters to win that football game. I don't know that I'm there right now. So yes, I would much rather play Sam Houston, like you said. For that to take place, Jack State would have to beat Western Kentucky, and Sam Houston would have to beat Liberty, and then Jack State would play Sam Houston. If Liberty were to win, they're in no matter what. And then, of course, if Western were to beat JSU and Liberty lose, then Western would be in. So a couple of different scenarios there, but I think if Jack State team take care of business on Saturday, you know, that Sam Houston and Liberty game on Friday, maybe we find out that maybe we can see a Bearcat win. Something to look for. And you said something interesting ago that was interesting. Winning is a skill. Go ask Nebraska fans if winning is a skill and see what they tell you. Because that team lost eight or nine one-possession games in one season. Go ask Sam Houston last year if winning is a skill. You know, if your team has a positive record, a record above 500 in one-score contest, then your team probably knows how to win football games. If you are a Nebraska or a Sam Houston from last year, your team does not know how to football game. Football, or winning, I'm sorry, is absolutely a skill. And like you said, I don't know that FIU and La Tech and Middle Tennessee have figured that out yet. But winning is certainly a skill. You can have all the great athletes in the world, but you got to go finish. You know, ask Oregon fans if winning is a skill over the last decade. You know, that team should have a national championship, and they don't. So it's interesting to talk about for a minute, but not, you know, real pertinent to Jack State other than Jack State knows how to win. They win one possession games. They did last year. They do this year. And there are teams that don't. So that's another thing to be proud of there. But beyond that, We'll move into some bowl projections here. I know, Brooks, you've got them pulled up over there, so we'll talk about a few of those before we close out shop.
So everything kind of pointed to us making the going to the Bahamas Bowl on what would be, I believe, January the 4th. And I think that's still very much, Saturday, January 4th. And I think that's still very much in the realm of possibility. I've heard rumors that, Greg Seitz has told everyone to go ahead and get passports. So it's sounding like, you know, they're in very serious talks with the Bahamas Bowl to play in that game. And again, that's still very much a possibility. But some of the big projections from some of the projections by big name sports writers have kind of shifted a little bit in terms of where we go. Who was it? Brett McMurphy. Brett McMurphy has us playing in the New Orleans Bowl, and so does Mark Schlabaugh. That both of them have us playing in the New Orleans Bowl again. I think one had us playing James Madison. The other had us playing in
Marshall, I believe.
Marshall. And then I can't remember who it was we had playing. Bonaguirre had us playing in the 68 Ventures Bowl in Mobile on December 26th. Gosh, I can't remember who that one was. That one may have been James. There was a few different teams as to who we could be playing. James Madison. I think Georgia Southern was one. May not have been. Or App State. I think App State. But a few different combinations of as to who we could be playing. Still two more weeks. We still got this week and conference championship. And it can go a lot of ways. One thing though that did stand out to me from looking at projections throughout the year, it kind of sounds like the New Orleans Bowl spot will go to the conference championship loser. So that kind of makes me wonder if a lot of people don't have us playing or have us losing to a Western Kentucky or a Liberty. I don't know. I think at this point it's hard to beat somebody twice, without a doubt, and you don't have a choice but to in this conference. And we're seeing that become the lay of the land in about every conference now. But I think I'm really high on us to beat Western this week. We'll do a full deep dive on our next episode later this week. And in the event that I think our chances are twice as good playing him in Jacksonville. I think that's going to be a raucous environment. And the way Western is playing as of late, I'm high on Caden Beltkamp, absolutely. But Western as a team, I'm just not. I think they're kind of headed in the wrong direction at this point. I may eat my words come Saturday, very much in the realm of possibility. But I'm a little bit more worried about Liberty right now, having to play them again instead of Western. And I know you say you weren't sold on Caden Salters as of right now, but something about this Liberty team tells me they're getting hot at a good time.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things is especially about Western that you said not being high on them. If you get 419 yards against Liberty, you know Jack State's going to do the same thing. And I don't think that if Jack State runs for 400, they're not going to lose a football game. So. I agree. I'm more than confident against Western this week, and you know, we'll see after that who we get between Liberty or Sam Houston. We'll know that before the Western game starts. because that Liberty and Sam Houston game is on Friday afternoon. So it'll be a lot of fun. We'll get into this more on later on this week on the Western preview. It's going to be 22 degrees at kickoff time in Bowling Green. I know that may not sound like it because it's going to play out in Jack State's favor, but it does because Western throws the ball. It's hard to throw the ball when it's cold outside, and easier to run the ball when it's cold outside. And Western just gave up 400 yards when it was 55 degrees outside. What are you going to do when it's 22 degrees outside? So I think this specific brand of football plays into cold weather environment a little bit better too. So I am, like you, more than confident in JSU against Western Kentucky. So that is something there. Also, real quick about bowl projections. Auburn has 5 wins now. Just saying. I know they got to
play in Auburn.
I know they got to go win in Tuscaloosa this week, but if Bama plays like they did against Oklahoma, I mean, why not? I think that's the game that would intrigue the fan base the most. Now, I know that there's a lot of money and a lot of sponsors and that kind of thing that's tied in. You know, I'm sure that whoever's sponsoring the Bahamas Bowl wants the Conference USA champion. Whoever sponsors the Cure Bowl in Frisco, Texas wants the conference champion, so it may not get a say in that. But if Auburn's able to go to Tuscaloosa and shock the world one more time, then they will have 6 wins, and that'll be back on the table there. So just something else to think about, I guess. But we'll have a lot better idea of the bowl projections after the conference title week. Of course, they'll be announced, I guess, the day after, but we'll have a lot more of an idea about, you know, why Jack State went to what bowl game once the title game wraps up. But beyond that, again, if you've made it 47 minutes into this podcast, we thank you guys for listening. We couldn't do it without you. Go follow us on Twitter if you haven't. Leave us a good review or a bad one. If you don't like us, either way is fine. We take criticism very well. And we'll talk to you guys here in a couple of days on our Western Kentucky preview, and we'll have a lot of breakdown there for the Western game. And beyond that, Brooks will outro us, and we'll see you guys here in a few days.
Yeah, real quick before I do that, according to collegefootballnews.com, Conference USA will get a chance at putting 4 or 5 teams in this long list of bowls, depending on matchups, geography, and availability. Birmingham Bowl versus SEC. It could happen. It could happen. But yeah, well, that'll all play itself out. We'll know in 2 weeks' time where we go. But we've got business to take care of in the meantime. We got a lot to clean up. Got to get better care of the ball. Got to quit turning over the ball on downs. But maybe get a little bit more production through the air. Like you said, I think this next week's game is going to very much play in our favor and our ability to run. As long as we keep the oxygen flowing, or the oxygen masks nearby for Tyler Huff and for Trey Stewart. But other than that, yeah, absolutely great week to be a Gamecock. Again, to go from 0-3 to where we are to now is nothing short of phenomenal. Phenomenal. We're seeing great. We're seeing unbelievable, unreal stuff at this point in our in the Gamecock program, and I fully expect for it to continue and just keep getting better and better. Regardless of how the season ends, this has been an outstanding season, and I can't wait to see how it ends. So, yeah, we'll talk to you guys on Wednesday or Thursday, and go Gamecocks. See y'all.